Oh my God, Dee Dee got a podcast?
What?
Dee Dee got a podcast.
What? What's the tea? What's the vibe? What's the hype? Yeah, we live. Talk a little this, a little bit of that. A little bit of love, a little bit of ratchet. That's Dee Dee. Go Dee Dee. Go Dee Dee. Yeah, go Dee Dee. You a bad bitch. You a savage. Making money is a habit.
It's Dee Dee in the morning, and it's Dee Dee's Dope Podcast. This right here is where you catch a laugh and get the tea, is what we say. This gentleman I'm getting ready to talk to, I can't wait. I cannot wait to get in his business, start asking some questions. Got a lot of nominations and things like that. Has written songs for a lot of folks and worked with a lot of artists. Everybody got to give it up for Dixon.
Thank you so much for having me, Dee Dee. Good morning.
All right. So let's talk first of all. You know, this is Dee Dee's Dope Podcast. And one of the things we want to ask people all the time is, what makes you dope? What makes Dixon dope?
I'm generally myself. I don't do a lot of capping for the internet. I pride myself on just being, you know, honest. A man of integrity, mm-hmm. and it shows up. And I think that's the dopest thing you can be is yourself.
Now that's so real.
Yeah.
That's so real. So let's have a conversation about you. I know that you are a writer and a singer.
Yes.
How long you been singing?
My whole life.
Since you were how old?
I think I got my first solo at like 4 or 5.
Are you serious? Yeah. Your first solo what, in church?
Yeah. My father was a pastor.
You're wild. All right, let's stop right there.
I'm wild.
This is a wild one. You're a PK kid. What do they call them? Preacher's kids?
We are. We are a bit wild sometimes.
All right, did you have a rebellious stage with your father being a pastor? Did you go through it?
No.
You didn't?
I was afraid of my father.
Really?
not in the, you know, scary way, but I just was afraid to, like, disappoint him.
Right.
He was so cool and chill. Like, I feel like I get a lot of my personality from him.
Mm-hmm.
He never really like gave us too much, you know. It was just like chill. He was never like overbearing or
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
Of my parents' marriage, I'm the only child. My dad was married once before my mom, and I have 4 sisters and 1 brother.
All right. And so did you ever watch your dad while he was practicing his sermons and stuff?
What's funny is I never really saw him practice his sermons. I felt like, man, he really just lived a life, like just a good life.
Yeah.
And I felt like everything that he was in the pulpit, he was outside of the pulpit.
Right.
There wasn't like 2 different mm-hmm. characters being played. He comes from the era of pastors where they had real jobs and also preached.
Okay.
I think his whole motivation behind doing it was just trying to like show people that they can have a life, you know, and also, you know, be dedicated to something.
So let's talk. You said, Dixon, you said you had your first solo at 4.
Yeah.
Did your mom sing in the choir? Or they just knew you knew how to sing? Like what?
My mom also is a musician.
Okay.
She's not a singer, but she can sing,
mm-hmm.
and she has a beautiful voice. My dad also sings too. My mom played woodwinds in college and high school and went to college on a scholarship for that. So she's very musical.
And it's hereditary, I see.
Yeah, my grandmother sang.
Yep.
Like, yeah, everybody on my dad's side can go.
Now, what about writing? Let's talk about you writing, right?
Yeah.
Because you've written some songs for Beyonce.
Mm-hmm.
Let everybody know those songs.
I wrote Be Alive for her, with her too, and we got nominated for an Oscar and a Golden Globe. And then I ended up working on Virgo's Groove and Pure Honey on the Renaissance album.
Okay. Question, you know, I got to ask, what is she like?
She's everything.
Really?
Yeah, she's everything that you think she is. She's kind. She's a hard, hard worker, meticulous.
Uh-huh.
She cares about the details.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You were impressed when you, or were you nervous when you first started writing with her? And how'd you meet? How'd you get into that?
It was such a chance encounter. I was actually in a writing camp for another artist.
Mm-hmm.
And one of her A&Rs was there, and she took a liking to me, and it just kind of happened organically.
And she comes up to you when you're writing for somebody else. Yeah. Was it 7 Streeter?
No, it wasn't 7.
Oh.
It was for, I think it was for just like a general writing camp for like a label or something.
Okay.
And she just happened to be there.
This A&R woman, and said, yeah, I like you. I want you to meet somebody.
I've heard about you, you know, through friends. We have mutual friends. And she was like, I've been trying to figure out, you know, the right opportunity, and this day.
How did she find out about you? Was it you wrote on somebody else's? Was it somebody else's song that she liked, or you started getting a reputation?
Yeah, I worked on Chance for quite a bit. I worked for Chance for a bit as a background singer, writer, producer.
That would be Chance the Rapper.
Chance the Rapper.
Okay,
yeah.
You know, you just dropped names like, you know, that was like, you
well,
tell
these are my these
friends.
Are my friends. Yes,
I know it.
Yes,
I see it.
I'm sorry.
I see it. And I'm like, okay, everybody, Chance the Rapper.
These are my real friends.
Yep.
But yeah, I worked for Chance for years, and around that time, he had just dropped this album called The Big Day, and I produced and co-wrote like 9 or 10 records on there. And people were starting to notice. We started getting in the conversation, like publishing deals, record deals, and all of that. And I guess my name had just kind of been
floating
around.
How many years ago was that?
The Big Day came out in 2019.
Wow.
Yeah.
Had you been grinding for so many years before you got that big break with Chance the Rapper? Was that the biggest break?
Yeah, that was huge. I had same background for Vic Mensa for a long time.
Okay.
Who's Chance's best friend. And yeah, we all kind of got to know each other. And 2019, I moved to Chicago to start working for Chance directly.
Uh-huh.
And what I thought was going to be just me working on the album ended up me like just going on the road and touring and all of that. So, and right out of that, I got a record deal. I signed the Hove in 2019 at Rock Nation.
Yeah. Excuse me. You didn't say that. I mean, I need you to say that again, too.
Oh, I signed to Rock Nation in 2019.
Now, how'd that happen? Because you were working with Chance, and he sees you on stage. He sees you had written 9 songs. Like, what?
When I tell people this story of how I got signed, they don't believe it.
Tell me.
Honestly. I was literally sitting in Soho. My girlfriend's kids had come to New York and to visit. Nikki was at work. Mm-hmm. I took them to get Chinese food. We literally had like maybe 50, 60 bucks to our name at the time. And I saw an A&R who I had just run into from being on the road.
Right.
And it was the day after Chance's album came out. And I stopped him. I told the kids, like, stay where you are. Like, don't move.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran after him and told him I had just dropped this album with Chance that I worked on. 9 to 10 songs.
And you knew who this person was based on his face. You studied the people, the right people to know. You knew who this person was.
I would see him all the time because Vic was signed to Rock Nation, so I would see him at things, you know. And like, I stopped him and told him what I had done. And the next morning, I was sitting in the office, and they had me playing them my records.
What?
It was just that quick. No, like, crazy, chase
gosh.
Or anything.
And so you're in his office the very next day. You're playing your music, and then they say, you're signed?
You can't leave the building. Yeah, that's kind of the story that happened. And then I became the first male R&B artist that Rock Nation ever signed.
Golly, and that was in 2019?
2019. Maybe, like, 2 months after my father passed away.
Wow. Sorry to hear that, but also there's that good news, right?
Oh, yeah. It was like I didn't even have time to, like, really process what had happened because so many good things started happening. Yeah.
This is interesting. Everybody, we are talking to Dixon, and he is a singer-songwriter and everything right now who's telling me all about, like, this is so, it's like a storybook. It's a dream, right?
It really is. I'm telling you, every time I tell people that story about how I got signed, people just are like, how? Like, how did that happen?
Do you pinch yourself some days and go, this is real, this is my life? Do you ever feel like this is too good?
I'm a powerful manifester. I have always, like, I grew up in church, obviously, so you know that I believe in the power of
the word and prayer.
You know, like, I do. Faith. I pray a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, as I've gotten older, I've realized, too, that, like, I can have all the faith in the world, but if I'm not, like, actively pursuing
it
or writing it down, and checking in with myself on the steps that I'm taking to get to it, then it probably won't happen. And I really, so much of this has just been me writing it down. So what happens a lot when you're manifesting is that you don't really get surprised often.
It's like you have a feeling that you know something is coming, something is bigger, something, the thing that you've been talking about, speaking about, visualizing, focusing on, spelling it out, you're saying it happens, right? You just, you know it's coming.
That idea is bigger than you.
It is.
You know what I'm saying? It's so much bigger than you. And I think once you lean into the fact that, like, the idea is bigger than you, and you just start planning for it, you know, it doesn't surprise you. And I think sometimes it's a gift and a curse, you know, because when you're not surprised by it, you might forget sometimes to celebrate yourself.
Right.
And you might forget to pinch yourself and know that, like, this thing that's happened to you doesn't happen to everybody else. And it's such a blessing, you know. But yeah, there are some days I do pinch myself and I'm like, wow, I get to do this every day.
What you dreamed of.
Yeah.
You know, the reason why I was saying that, and I honed in on when you were talking about, you know, manifesting and writing it down, right? Because some people, I've said this many times on the podcast too, about, you know, they say when you spell it out, you're casting a spell to a sense or whatever it is, or you're visualizing something and you're speaking my language, because I've been like that all my life. I believe in that wholeheartedly.
Like,
you know?
I go through like a lot of journals a year of just writing things down, even if it's lyrics that I'm like not using that day. Like, I just write them down because eventually I'll go back to them like, oh man, I said this really cool thing. Just randomly sitting on a plane or riding in the car, I'm constantly like voice memoing lyric ideas and melody ideas, because all of that is a part of the steps that you're taking to see it in the world.
Right.
You know.
So do you see the lyrics and musical? I'm always curious about that with people. Like, do you play the piano? Did you study music professionally?
Yeah, I play 11 instruments.
We got a Prince right here. Prince Rogers Nelson again. What?
Yeah, I mean, Prince is a big influence on me. But in my dad's church, when he got his own church, we just didn't have like the resources to like go and hire some amazing band, you know.
Right.
I had to learn
band.
Yeah, I had to learn how to be that. And I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for that process.
You said you play 11 instruments.
I think it's 11.
So would you say, let's write them, let's think about them.
Let's go through them.
Okay, what is it?
I play piano. Mm-hmm. I play organ. I play guitar, electric guitar, bass. I play clarinet, flute. What else do I play? I play drums. That's my first instrument. I play.
Gee whiz.
What else do I play? My voice is an instrument.
Yep.
I'm very proficient in Pro Tools.
Oh, wow. What about the tambourine? That's what I can
play. I play tambourine. I play congas, djembe, like a lot of the African instruments. My parents, they never really got in the way of me, like, wanting to learn something new.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know how sometimes, like, a child might come to their parents and be like, yo, I want to do this thing.
Yeah.
And they're like, man, you didn't finish the last thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think my parents were, like, figuring out pretty early that, like, everything that I wanted to learn was so related and intertwined, and that it would serve me in some way that, like, they didn't get in the way. Thank God. My mom was an educator. She taught for over 40 years in the Atlanta public school system. And, I think about the things, the crazy ideas that I came to my parents with, that they were just like, yeah, sure, like, let's do it. Even when I could tell my mom, because she's very practical, she was a little hesitant. But then I had my dad, who was this like wild, crazy dreamer. And yeah, he would just be like, yo, your mom doesn't want to get it from Guitar Center, but let's go to the pawn shop and see if they got it. You know what I'm saying?
So you had, like, people, you had parents who supported you.
And my grandmother, too. My grandmother was always on the phone telling my mom, like, Ruby, you got to let them do it. You know that, right?
So you were like this young prodigy, it sounds like, and that they saw something in you. Because, see, I told my mom as a kid, hey, I want to learn how to play an organ. I think my mom got me a little small toy organ thing, you know, didn't mean nothing. Hey, mom, I want to try to play this. She wouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. I think she realized I wasn't really as talented as I thought. Right.
I think my mom realized how much joy it brought me, like discovering new things.
Yeah.
And I think that related so much to her being a teacher and an educator. Like, when a child learns something for the first time, there's this like unmatched joy that comes with a child learning, oh man, I've conquered this thing.
Yeah.
Right. And the small things, right? Like, even me, like, I'll never forget just being in a room with her and like getting my first clarinet and her pulling out her clarinet and showing me something, and I'm able to like regurgitate it back. Or like my mom telling me that Ribbon in the Sky was their wedding song, and I go downstairs and I learn it on piano without them.
Yeah.
And then at their anniversary, I just show up playing.
Okay. Yeah, you're very talented. Gee whiz.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this about your talent, because you said you went from writing for Chance the Rapper, and then you're out here and you're writing with Beyonce. Yeah. How do you speak as a writer from the voice of a Chance the Rapper to a Beyonce?
Empathy.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I think the best songwriters are able to take themselves out of it and just listen.
It's like, okay, you've heard the term empath then, yeah, right? Everybody says you're an empath. Because some people will say they are and don't understand what that really means, and yeah. I get it.
I know that I am.
I am too. That's why I was getting ready to say, I know that too, and I get mad at myself too sometimes, right?
Because sometimes you can't help but feel people. Yeah.
And you're like, I'm trying not to, right? Yeah. You try to not to, because you could feel it. So that's what it is that helps you become a better, become such a great writer, is because you have that and you can put yourself in the position of the eyes, or kind of see it from a point of view of a female, like a Beyonce. Yeah. And then you can say, Chance, is what you're able to say to me as an empath.
And then you find the common connectors. And I think, man, so many people in the world, it's a gift that writers have to be able to encapsulate a story and encapsulate feeling. Because I feel like a lot of people feel things, right? We know emotions, right. We know sadness, we know anger, we know happiness, we know joy. But to make that a lyric is not always easy.
Right.
Right. Like somebody could express to you that they're happy, but it might just be in their body and not in what they say.
Got it.
But I'm able to look at a person and be like, man, she was almost jumping out of her chair when she said this.
Right.
You know? And then I'm able to turn that into a lyric or turn it into a melody. Like sometimes I'm just listening to people talk and I'm like, man, the way they inflect their words, like if I can put that on record and they hear themselves in the record, then they might take that record.
So here's my question, Dixon, as a songwriter, I'm trying to understand, because like, for instance, you know, I have often heard that the best artists are the ones who are able to tell their life story in their music almost, right? Yeah. You know, when Beyonce did Ring the Alarm at one point, let everybody know on notice about her man, or Becky with the good hair, it was, oh, he's cheated. But it's like telling us, Mary J. Blige.
Yeah.
Mary J. Blige That's will tell example. You, you know what I mean, what's going on in her, and she reflects it. And they often say some of the best artists are the ones that can do that. Is that true, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think also the best artists, because not everybody's like a Mary or a B that's like actually in there writing and doing, like, not every artist is that, you know, like some artists are just really good at being open to that honesty and letting an interpreter do that
put
too,
that out.
You know?
Yeah, is it? Because here's, for instance, like I told somebody, I mean, I'm going to give an example. And I said, because sometimes artists can't figure out who they are, they say, or what they want to put out there, right? And I was talking about Danny Lay, right?
Yeah,
Danny Lay and DaBaby had the biggest, whatever, blow up and this and this and this and this, right? This thing.
Not
and,
bigger than Blueface and...
Well, I know. Now, that's but, that's beyond. Now, that's toxic.
Yeah,
that's toxic at the highest level.
That's some different stuff.
But I said to somebody, I want Danny Lay to go back into the studio and really grind and really try to figure out what she's trying to say and get it together. I said, because... And not be the angry... You know, we have Summer Walker did that with you know, her last album was all about her feelings and being angry. But I'm going, she needs to do that and tell more of her story and what that looks like and figure out how to do it in a positive way. Because it's there, right? Wouldn't you think you can't get around it?
But what if that's not how she feels?
But I'm just saying, but what I'm just trying to say to you, and as an example of like, okay, Beyonce puts in there the thing that was so public, Jay-Z and Beyonce on the elevator. Yeah. And she addressed it in there, right? Yeah. And everybody loves it. I'm saying, does that work? Is that something that an artist should do when you have something that is that big, right? Something that's happened in your personal life so big, do you think they should address it in songs?
I think truth connects.
Yeah.
It always does. It will always connect because there's always somebody in this earth that's living the same thing. It's like we have individualized experiences, but so much of what we experience is a collective thing, you know?
Okay.
And I think we underestimate sometimes the value of the collective experience. It's like, if I tell you I lost my father, that's one sentence.
Okay.
How many more people have that same sentence in their life path?
Me.
You see what I mean?
Immediately.
And instantly, now I've written there's a song about it and there's a connection. If I tell you someone cheated on me, how many people have that in their life path? And that's the power of this collective thing that we have as human beings and living here on this earth. Like, so much of what we go through is relatable. It doesn't matter how much money you have or how little money you have or the resources that you have. Everybody knows what it feels like to get slighted. So when you talk about haters, everybody know what it's like to have a hater, you know? And so it works. And it's a beautiful thing that it works, because if I'm able to say it right, then I got a hit record.
So before we even get into your career real quick, who do you think has been the greatest some of the greatest writing as a songwriter? Who do you think are some of the greatest you can name?
Some of the greatest writers, mm-hmm. Stevie.
Yep.
Donnie.
Okay.
I really think Esther Dean is really special. Mm-hmm. I think James Fauntleroy is really special. Mm. The Dream is really special.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Dream, just on him for a bit, like, he's able to do that thing that a lot of great writers are able to do, and that's to just be empathetic.
Yeah, yeah.
And listen to the details and be able to, like, spit it back to you in a way that makes sense. Even in his own music. His own music is so personal, and you feel like you're there with him. And I really look up to The Dream.
So I'm going to ask you a question, because I had a conversation with somebody recently, actually my brother, who he's been in radio too. We've been in radio a long time. And
oh, wow.
We listen to music and everything, and we know it. My mom used to sing back in the day. What would you say? Can you name me three songs, mm-hmm. one from the past, one from the, you know, currently, that you could go, that was a perfect song, from arrangement to vocal to, can you name three perfect songs? You go, and like, that was a perfect song.
Okay. From the past, Love's in Need of Love Today by Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder, okay.
A little beyond that, I love Don't Disturb This Groove by The System.
What?
That is a perfect song. That's
one of my favorites.
That is a really perfect
dun,
dun,
song. Dun, 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 dun. It was the everything about it. I can't believe you said that.
Every element of that song was just properly placed. The verses, the chorus, the pre-hook, the melody, the music behind it. Perfect song.
Yep.
I'll give you another one from around that time too. I Have Nothing, Whitney Houston.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. That vocal
it's a heavy song. And then currently, a perfect song.
Did you go perfect from beginning to end?
Perfect from beginning to end. It's so weird. There's that Boot Up song by LMA.
Really?
You know, it got a lot of radio play.
I know what you're talking about. Boot Up.
And it's like every time that song comes on, it feels the exact same way. I feel like that's the thing that makes it a classic.
By the way, I'll just say this about her. I sure do love this song with her and Babyface, by the way. But yeah, anyway, with that beat they took.
Also, now, that's a great album, by the way.
Do you want to know what song I think is perfect from beginning to end that I haven't heard?
Uh-huh. Okay.
Hours and Hours.
That's because the mind behind that song is a brilliant songwriter. Priscilla Renee Money Long, however you became introduced to her. She also wrote California King Bed for Rihanna. Another
amazing song.
Perfect song.
And I'm going to tell you why I told somebody this. And when my brother was asking me, I said, the reason why that song is perfect, her vocals are perfect.
Yeah.
The trick she does with her vocals, yeah. You know, the melody, the writing,
For me, it's the structure of the song. The structure of the song is by far one of the best structures.
Isn't it? Yeah. When you really think about what's going on today. Let's talk about
every
you,
part of that song works too, by the way. Like Quincy Jones, you know, one of his big things was trying to make every part of a record feel like a hook. And Priscilla's verses feel like a hook. The hook feels like a hook. The little ad-libs that she's doing feel like
everything.
A hook.
That's what I'm saying. The writing, everything, you know.
She teed up for that one.
The cleverest line to me is when she talks about the lobster towers.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And the way she made it, for some reason, I knew, you know, we all go and get us some sushi. So we're like, wow, you know, I just thought
I think the most clever part for me is the way she used hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the way she used it to go from the word that begins with the H to the word that begins with the O. And like just the simple thought of being able to sit and talk with someone for hours. That's such a visual, visceral thing.
I tell you, like, perfection.
You want that in a relationship.
Perfection. And the fact that you said,
you want that in a situationship if you're in one of those. Like, you want that in a fling. Like, you want to feel that way no matter what you're doing with the person that you're attracted to.
That's interesting. I can't believe you said, Don't disturb this groove.
That's my one. Also, if you haven't heard the Michelle Indigo cello version of that song.
Really? Really?
If you love the original song, this one's going to mess you up.
I'm going to have to do that. Let's talk about you, though, real quick. I know that, and I'm trying not, I mean, you're so interesting, and I know it's a day that you're going to be performing. And
we're chilling.
But, so you now, how many awards now you've been nominated for? Best New Artist, all kind of stuff, huh?
Best New Artist, Soul Train Award. We had the Golden Globes. We had the Critics' Choice Awards. We had did I win the Critics' Choice? No.
Oh my goodness!
I won one for Be Alive for Beyonce, but I can't remember exactly which one it was. We had the Oscars. This year, I believe Be Alive is going to be up for Grammy, for Best Original Song for a movie or a television.
Now, are you in the studio when she records it so you can tell her, don't do this, do that?
Not for Be Alive. Okay. I wasn't around. I was able to play it for her in the studio, which was nice, but she's a very busy person. Yeah. And I just played her my, you know, version of the song, and then she takes it
and makes it her
she
own.
She goes and we give it back to each other. So it's a beautiful thing. I love to work with artists who do their work.
Seven Streeter. Because you guys got a song together.
No, we have several songs together. That is she is special.
Yeah.
She's special. She's a great friend, but just another writer that really understands empathy. Like, Seven will sit in a room and not speak and just listen. And then she'll be like, all right, I'm ready to go in the booth and encapsulate everything that you were trying to,
That's
you know.
Great.
So even for me, like, you know, there Seven and I did Cherry Sorbet together. Which is a super special record, but she also, the record that I have with Tinashe, she wrote that one with me. She wrote some of my parts.
Wow.
And she wrote, you know, some of Tinashe's parts too. And the fact that she's just able to like morph into these other characters is just a beautiful thing to watch. She's a rare talent. Also, she sings her face off.
Yeah, she can sing. Yeah. She can sing, and I like her. She came through the station several times. She's very down to earth, and I love that.
She's a country girl. Yeah. Just like, you know, I'm a country boy. So
I love it. So where do you see yourself? Where is Dixon going to be in 5 years? Where do you want to be?
In 5 years? Yeah. Hopefully I'll be on a very large tour.
Really?
I think I got a lot more to say just vocally and creatively. And I hope that those things allow me to be on the world stage in a really major way, so I can set up a life, you know, for me and my family. I'm very blessed right now, so I'm not stressed about it. But, 5 years, big tour.
Yeah.
10 years might be something different. But, yeah, everybody needs a five-year plan. I feel like my five-year plan led me here, and we've been now re-road mapping and, like, planning this next 5 years for me. I think it's going to be huge.
When I think about artists in the pinnacle of, some people would say, you know, I want to work with Beyonce. You've done it. I want to be signed to Jay-Z's label. You've done it.
Yeah.
I want to be nominated for an Oscar. You've done it.
Yeah.
Come on. What else is there? Is there another artist you want to work with? A goal like that at all?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to, I'd love to work with Rihanna.
Yeah.
I've written things for her, but just haven't, they haven't landed yet, so I'm hopeful for that. I also love working with new artists.
Yeah.
I didn't get in the business of music to like check off a bunch of boxes. I got in the business of music for it to be my career. So if 5 years from now I'm not working with the biggest artist, at least I hope I'll be working with artists.
Right.
I'm in service to the music. That's always been my goal. I've never wanted anything more than to just be able to wake up every day and say, you know what, today I'm going to make this song.
Right.
And I spent a lot of years not doing that. I spent a lot of years clocking in from my 9 to 5 or putting on my suit to go to my executive job.
Right.
And now I get to just wake up and make. And that's all I ever wanted.
By the way, do you have to have a certain thing or a mood? Do you have to set a mood when you're writing a song, or it just comes to you?
I write everywhere. I write on planes. I write, you know, in the bathroom. I write, in the shower. When I'm in the studio, though, I try to set an atmosphere, not just for myself, but for the people that are coming in and out of that space, to just let them know that it's safe, you know, like it's safe to be yourself and say the things that's on your mind. Like I said, truth always connects. Mm-hmm. At any given point, like there could be, you know, incense or candles. But when we're working with other artists, I ask them what they want.
Right.
You know, like, do you drink wine?
Right.
Or do you, you know, we're in LA, so do you smoke weed?
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and we always just try to make sure that we're in service.
Right.
And when I say we, like my team, like they know I'm very big on the energy in the room. It's very important that we're like, where we realize that our job is to make the thing, right? But our job is so much bigger. Our job is making people feel safe. Our job is making people feel accommodated, that they feel comfortable enough to even sing.
Wow.
And I've been very blessed to go on a lot of sessions where people will, like the A&R will tell me, they normally don't cut vocals, you know, in the writing session. Mm. I'm like, okay, cool.
Good.
And then they get in the room with me and they're like, I'll cut vocals. Like, it's safe here. And that just makes me feel like we're doing the job that we're supposed to be
doing. And you're giving off good energy. Like you said, yeah. Energy is big.
It's huge.
It's transferable.
It's also how you get to these records.
Yep. Yep.
I don't feel like all of these hit records have to come with such a struggle.
Yeah.
They can actually just come from good people wanting to make good music.
And that's it. And feeling the vibe with each other. I like it. Yeah. Well, let everybody know how to get your music, where to follow you. Let's do some plugging now.
Let's do some plugs. Okay. So I just dropped a project. It's called 04 Daisy. It's doing really well. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's on the short list for the Grammys. That shouldn't persuade you either way.
I know it.
It's kind of cool that it's happening. Uh-huh. It's called 04 Daisy. It just dropped maybe about a month and a half ago. So check me out there. I'm Dixon, D-I-X-S-O-N, everywhere where there's social media. And I hope to see you at a show.
You will. You're going to see me at a show. And I'm coming in to write when you're writing for all the rest of these big celebs.
Yeah, get a little publishing in there.
And then when you get Rihanna, I want to be there too when you write with her. I'll help write. I wrote a song when I was a kid. It was called, you know, If I Had a Brain, I Would Be a Pencil. That was my song.
That's actually fire.
Ain't it? Right? It was like, yes.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for having me. I've been a fan for a long time. I spent a lot of road hours listening to Dee Dee in the Morning.
Well, thank you.
So I'm glad to be here with you.
Thank you. We're blessed to be on a bunch of cities. So shouts out to all the cities 30, listening.
I heard
70. It's 70 something. Yeah, we're at 70.
Oh my God. Yeah. So they told me the wrong information. Yeah. I was like, yo, she's syndicated in 30 markets. No. That's crazy. It's 70.
70 now. Oh, we're up to 70. I want to say, is it 70, 71, Breeze? 72.
Oh my God, you're killing the game.
I know, we're trying. We're doing
it. That's amazing.
Yeah.
No, seriously.
We're blessed. Trust and believe me. And it was a vision.
Yeah,
It was what I put.
You wrote it down.
Wrote it down. Had a vision board. Wow. You know, all of that kind of stuff. You know, prayed like you said. Pray every morning on the way in to say, God, expand this and let us do what we need to do. But yeah, we're blessed.
You're doing it.
I'm blessed. But thank you so much. I love Dixon. You're dope for real. I like it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'll see you tonight.
All right.
Yeah.
It's Dee Dee in the Morning.
What's the tea? What's the vibe? What's the hype? Yeah, we live. Talk a little this, a little bit of that. A little bit of love, a little bit of ratchet. That's Dee Dee. Go Dee Dee. Go Dee Dee. Go Dee Dee. You a bad bitch. You a savage. Making money is a habit.